Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome once again to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. Dry and relatively mild across most of the country is making for a good start to early February. Today I'm joined by Adam Woods, Lorcan Roach, Kelly and Declan Marn to talk all things farming. As normal, to start, the quick fire questions for Adam, Lorcan and Declan. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 0868-366-465. Adam, one quick fire in for you. Ask Adam, I had a few cases of pneumonia in young calves this last few weeks and it shook them a lot. Would you still go in and dehorn them or would you leave them for a while? Talk to me, Adam.
Yeah, Jack. I suppose maybe one of the first questions there is why is there pneumonia on that farm? Maybe the first thing, there's something going on. That pneumonia doesn't happen for no reason, I suppose. And, you know, was there enough colostrum going in? Is there low-level drafts? Is something else going on that's lowering the immunity of the calves that they're taking pneumonia? But the second piece, yeah, they're probably right in terms of delaying maybe that dehorning for a little bit longer just to allow that calf pick up again. And I'd say definitely, if you're going into dehorn there, going in with a painkiller like Medicam, and definitely we'll say freezing in terms of, you know, adrenochrome or some form of you know, local anesthetic to reduce the stress. It's all about reducing the stress on that calf that it doesn't get a relapse back into that again. So delay it as long as possible, but I'd still dehorn though now rather than, you know, dehorn at 6 months or whatever.
There is that legal requirement too on dehorn. It isn't there. There's a piece there that you have to kind of get in at a certain age. But there's an animal welfare piece you're putting over and above that at the moment in terms of the animal is sick and is stressed.
Absolutely.
Without more stress.
And it's probably good practice anyway, Jack, with regardless of the cows are sick or not, to begin with that painkiller and going in with that adrenochrome or whatever. So you know, definitely use that when the calves are under pressure. Yep.
Excellent. Lorcan Roach, Quelly, one question in, and it's relating to this Kildare Chilling Dawn deal that you're writing about a lot this week. Lorcan, we'll talk about this more in the main show, but quick fire in, how long might it take to get a decision from the CCPC on the Kildare Chilling Dawn proposed deal? Lorcan, talk to me.
Jack, I think the one thing when I was talking to the people at the CCPC, that's a Competition and Consumer Protection Commission, was that the way they look at deals, they look at mergers, they look at it phase one and phase two. Phase one is quite easy. If they think, okay, there's no real problems, wave it through, could take a matter of weeks. But when it goes to a phase two investigation, that's where it becomes very complex. And especially a deal like this, where there's real problems of competition after the deal, that it could take, well, it would definitely take more than a year and could take longer than that. And if the CCPC reject the merger, then the parties do have the chance of going to the courts and having an appeal. So this could drag on for years.
Excellent. We'll definitely talk about that now again in a few minutes. Declan, one quick fire in for you. Once a day feeding dairy beef calves, is it a runner or am I better sticking to twice a day for the first few weeks? Declan, talk to me. Milk feeding, I presume. Now, the questioner hasn't said that, but I presume we're milk powder feeding dairy beef calves.
Yeah, definitely for the first few weeks, you're sticking to twice a day, Jack. You know, I wouldn't be even thinking about going to once a day before probably a month, 5 weeks old at least. You know, that calf doesn't have the size to consume enough milk in one feed up to that age. after that, then from a labor point of view, yeah, you probably can move to once a day and it is labor efficient. Tagus research have shown, you know, feeding less milk, 4 liters versus 8 liters, you get that calf moved over to a ruminant quicker. They eat more meal, and you kind of kick them over into a ruminant quicker, but they were still feeding their 4 liters in two and two. So they weren't going to once a day, but from a labor point of view, yeah, once your calf is strong enough, 4 or 5 weeks old, go to once a day.
Excellent, thank you. And we'll talk about that again in a few minutes. Adam, you'll be hoping that nothing changes, I presume, whether it's Kildare chilling or Dawn. The Mart trade is absolutely on fire at the moment.
Yeah, unbelievable, Jack. It's a front page story this week. Was in a few marts over the last 7 days, and I've never seen anything like it in terms of the appetite there around that ring. And it's not one specific cohort, Jack. It's a number of different people. You know, you've exporters, you've farmer buyers, you've a couple of people starting now for grass. You have, we'll say, feedlot finishers and your factory agents. So all of them are just, you know, there's rows breaking out around some mart rings in terms of looking for cattle and getting cattle. And look, at that's always good to see. And definitely there's nothing, yeah, hopefully nothing on the horizon to jeopardize that in the next few weeks.
So am I fair in saying, Adam, that it's not just the finished cattle? I was kind of maybe cornering this piece in that the finished heavy cattle were really on fire. But you're saying there's other stock classes, we'll say, that are also kind of hitting high numbers.
No, there's immediate cattle, we'll say, for direct slaughter within a few days of being purchased. But there's also in terms of, you know, some factories are very, very concerned about sort of March, April, beginning of May. Young bulls tend to come in around the end of May, maybe beginning of June. So that sometimes shores up supplies in terms of that around that time of the year. But before that, no young bulls come on stream. So cattle are going to be very tight. And they've given the nod to some of them bigger finishers for those forward stores. I'd say not finished cattle, but sort of forward stores. Maybe north of 500 kilos for a big finish then for the next 60-90 days, and those cattle are also a really, really solid trade. And then you've got the exporters for that 300 to 400 kilo animal. They're really, really hungry for those. A number of exporters now in the market for those, and they're really, really very fit at the moment in terms of what they're able to give for those calves.
And Adam, when you do the sums in terms of what you see the live prices are in the ring, and when you compare it to what you're seeing on the factory kill sheets, I mean, how far out are we? Or what's the
look, Jack, you're 6 euros a kilo this week in the mart. You know, there's numerous marts I watched during the week, and you know that the prices, you know, 600 heifers north of 600 kilos, they're hitting 320, 330, 340 a kilo there on a regular basis. So if you translate that into a beef price, that's 6 euros, possibly north of 6 euros for some of those animals, depending on killer and depending on grade. So that's around 120 or 150 a head of a factory trade. Now, look, there could be isolated cases, and maybe not every animal isn't going to do that, but definitely there is specific cases. And I suppose the thinking is there that if factories give a, you know, 580, we'll say, of a base price to somebody in the lairage, that price can get out there as regards what's given. If they have agents around the ring paying, it's a little bit more token dagger stuff as regards what they're given or where those cattle are going. Nobody really knows if they've been slaughtered tomorrow, they've been slaughtered next week, what job they're going to. Some of them are dealing online, so there's even more token dagger stuff there as regards nobody knows who's buying. So it as a strategy, it's probably working for them to be buying in March. And look, they have to buy in March at the moment because the cattle aren't actually going to the lairages, specifically with cows. Cows are, we've 700 cows in Gortat Lay last Friday, 400 in Kilkenny, you know, huge numbers of cows, but they're going to the mart now instead of going to the factory because farmers have copped on that there's more value to be got in the mart.
And is it fair to say, Adam, that trend of a higher mart price has been reflected fairly well right through the year, has it? You know, it's not a new phenomenon for just this week.
No, it's not. No, it definitely has. You know, people have been returning. We've seen mart numbers up in 2022 when we looked at that at Christmas. So that trend is set to continue, I'd say, definitely with the last, you know, 4 weeks. And the other thing is, I suppose, we're tracking up on slaughter numbers, which is going to be good for another couple of months. You know, we're supposed to be down between 5 and 6% for Q1 and Q2. We're actually up 1.5% at the moment. So that means we've an even harder fall to come before the end of June in terms of supplies. So that should help beef prices coming down the line.
Yeah. Adam, we were on tour with the CAP Roadshow for the last couple of weeks. And in fairness, almost at every meeting, we've got a couple of questions. When you've done your presentation in terms of the new suckler cow scheme that's coming in as part of this new CAP reform, one of the elements is that the farmer has to be Boerbeev quality assured. We've always got lots of feedback on that, lots of questions around, you know, why do you have to be quality assured, etc., and that kind of thing from farmers in the audience. And I'll say particularly suckler farmers, it's fair to say, Adam, where are you on it now? Will it stay or will it go, do you reckon?
Sure, look, we got confirmation this week, Jack, from the department on Tuesday at our CAP event in Mullingar that's pretty much set in stone. Look, this was sent to Brussels. The terms and conditions of this scheme and the design of this scheme was sent to Brussels in 2022 for arbitration or for looking at in terms of approval. And they approved that scheme based on the terms and conditions attached to it. And Board B Equality Assurance was one of those conditions. Look, we're ready to open, Jack, here. We're good to go on the 20th of March. The department have said they want applications open by the 20th of March to be closing by the 15th of May. So changes at this stage are very, very unlikely. There is a massive amount of frustration out there, and we've seen a lot of that at the CAP meetings, especially, as you said, Suckland to Wheanland farmers that haven't been in quality assurance before this. They don't see a value being in quality assurance because they're not slaughtering animals. Somebody that's finishing a lot of animals is getting 20 cent there, or getting 12 cent, or getting 8 cent based on the different age categories of animals. But if you're selling Wheanlands, there's not an awful lot in it there for you. So they're seeing, you know, this is a cost on them. Maybe it's an extra burden, an extra requirement just to get a scheme, this SCEP scheme. But yeah, IFA have called for changes. I don't think they're going to come at the moment, Jack. I'd say people would want to get plans in place getting into that scheme because the department said on Tuesday night as well that there might be a little bit of leeway. It was supposed to be by the time you join the scheme on the 20th of March, you have to be quality assured. They're saying now that possibly you'll have a couple of months to get into that quality assurance program, but there'll be thousands to get into that, Jack. And you might say it's a simple process, but it takes a phone call, it takes an application, it takes an audit, it takes approval. So there's a number of weeks there to get through that. And if there's a number of weeks of a waiting list, you could find yourself down the track in terms of getting quality assured. So very important to get working on that fairly soon.
Okay, staying with that, Adam, and staying with our CAP roadshow, Mullingar, we had a crowd out the door on Tuesday night. What I suppose are your take home messages from the CAP job at this stage?
Look, Jack, there's a massive amount of confusion out there, I think, even though there's been a lot of talk about it, but still farmers, there's a huge amount of change coming in 2023. And look, David Buckley made an interesting comment on Tuesday night that I think it was 80,000 farmers or something clicked that no changes option on their BPS application when they were doing it online in 2022. That no changes option won't be there in 2023. So look, it's one of the biggest income streams on dry stock farms, and it's really important to give it the time that it deserves in 2023. And let that be an advisor, or let it be yourself just studying it. There's a number of things you can do at the moment. Number one is your Space for Nature. You can go in on Ag Food and check where you are with Space for Nature. Now, the vast majority of farmers will have over and above what they require for Space for Nature, but just important to go in there, familiarise yourself with it. Make sure you know all the water courses on the farm, all the hedges on the farm, because when you apply by the 15th of May in 2023, you're saying, that's what's on my farm. So really important to go through that with a fine-tooth comb. Second thing is entitlements. A lot of talk about entitlement values changing. You can go on there, just Google CAP calculator, and it'll give you back your entitlements, where they're going and where they're going to go. That's important for budgeting, because if you're down a lot of money in 2023, that's less money to pay bills at the end of this year. So something has to change there. So those two things I'd say most important over the next couple of weeks, and just give that the time that it needs.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well said. There's a couple of key things that guys can do now before they ever go to their consultant or advisor or whatever. And Adam, we'll be covering this. I suppose we're going to have a CAP booklet coming out soon. And like, you'll be covering and keeping updated on schemes every week from kind of now on, really, to the middle of May. Like, it's a crucial time for these farmers because it's real income on your side of the house, especially.
Absolutely. The case studies that we would have done at those CAP meetings went down really well, and we'll have a lot of case studies within that CAP booklet, just examples of different farms, and farmers can associate themselves then with this farm or that farm, and also the details around those schemes. There's a huge amount of change. There's CRIS, there's BIS, there's Eco Schemes, there's Space for Nature, there's all those different convergence, all those different terms and terminologies. Look at the CAP booklet, it'll be full of that, and that, as you said, that's coming out in the next few weeks.
Beef trade, Adam, where's it at?
Actually, yeah, very steady, Jack. Kicking on, say 525 there for bullocks, maybe the top of 530. I've heard of 540 there this week for overage cattle. You know, flat prices, 535 for Frisian bullocks, 520 for cows, would you believe? Like, cows, manufacturing beef is going really, really well, and there's massive wholesale demand there for cows, and the wholesalers are driving that trade, to be honest. They're up at the top of the market. So, yeah, really, really good. Numbers probably tightening a wee bit as well. So I'd say interesting to look at this week versus last week. This week this year versus this week last year, with the cow kill, 26% of the kill last week was cows, 22% in 2022 was cows. So just a change in sort of a landscape there as regards cows and where the market is going. But yeah, nothing to say that trade will stop. I'd say you'll see it kick on another bit, I'd say, in the next week.
Excellent. Last one for you, and I'll talk to Declan Martin a little bit more about this in a minute. But you had a story this week on calf exports. Do you feel there's trouble ahead on the calf export job?
Yeah, so this was a meeting of the Council of Ministers on Tuesday, Jack, and Charlie McConnell, Minister of Agriculture, Charlie McConnell was there, and he made representations for Ireland as regards. There's a number of countries, the Netherlands up there being most vocal in terms of banning export to third countries. Now, this is third countries outside of Europe. It would say export, live export within Europe is still okay, but Ireland were very vocal against this in terms of jeopardising trade. And look, we're doing a lot of weanlings now to Turkey, we're doing cattle to Libya, and it would have a serious effect on the trade going out there. But it's just worrying to see there was three or four member states really, really strong on that proposal to ban those live exports. Now, there was 10 member states came back with a counter proposal to change that, we'll say, proposal in terms of going forward to legislation. So, look, we'll be watching that space, but I think, look, at the writing's on the wall maybe as regards young calves, Jack. I think, you know, that the headwinds there are saying, you know, you've got Green parties in control, not in control, but in as part of governments across Europe, and I'd say we just need to be thinking about the future as regards exporting young calves. I'd say that'll kick out to an older age calf in the future, and we need to put the plans in place to make sure we're able to cope with that.
Excellent. If you can, Adam, stay with me, because I think you'll be interested in the chat I'm going to have with Larkin Roach Kelly. Larkin, in fairness, welcome to the show. I think you might be making your debut on Farm Tech Talk. If I come, Larkin, in terms of what you're writing about this week, your great piece in terms of the Kildare chilling deal, our potential deal with Dawn Meats and that potential takeover that we flagged and wrote about last week. Can you just maybe just before we get into the kind of where that deal might stand now, can you just tell me, you talked to the CCPC this week, can you tell me who they are and I suppose what's their role in life?
Yeah, I think the CCPC was an interesting chat. We talked to Brian McHugh, he's on the board of the CCPC. Competition Consumer Protection Commission is their name. But like a lot of people see them as like, you know, hear their ads on the radio all the time talking about, you know, are you like getting the best deal you can, your mortgage, are you shopping around for stuff? And they do consumer recalls for products as well. But a big part of the business as well is protecting competition in the market. And one of the things I look at there is mergers. So they have lots and lots of reports of a whole division that looks at mergers and companies that decides, is this merger good for competition or bad for competition? And there is a legal definition that they have, and it's if a merger substantially lessens competition in the market, then the merger cannot go ahead as proposed. Okay. So there are lots and lots of mergers that they look at. And they gave me a few examples, like, you know, there was an interesting one there last year in Tesco was taking over some shops in Galway. And there was one place in Oramore in Galway where if Tesco took over the supermarket, there'd be no other supermarket to compete against it. So in order to let the merger go ahead, Tesco had to take over the supermarket and then sell it to somebody else just to allow competition in the area. So they're quite active in the whole competition area.
And in the farming space, I mean, there is a train of thought, Larkin, that some of this can be positive, okay? In terms of you're consolidating, you're potentially taking cost out of the processing piece, and that could potentially be better for farmers. I mean, how do they balance the piece around, as you say, competition and then the potential benefits of consolidation?
I think, yeah, they have a formula that they stick stuff into. They say like, okay, let's look at the market overall, see how many firms or how many participants are around the market on the production side. And they have a formula that they can work out whether the consolidation is okay for competition or if it's bad for competition. It's kind of complex, but basically we went through it in this week's paper. But if you look at it, say, if you've got, say, 10 participants in a market, each hold 10% of the market, and two merge, and you've got one is 20 and all the rest are 10, that's kind of okay. But if you look at this particular deal that may or may not happen, the potential deal between Dawn and Kildare Chilling, there's two markets involved there. There's the beef market and the sheep market. On the beef market side, there are still a lot of participants on buying and processing beef in Ireland. So when Kildare Chilling and Dawn Meat come together, it tightens the market for competition a little bit, but it's not very bad. It's like, you know, it's within the parameters they want to look at. But it's on the sheep side that the real red flags are raised, because when they put it into their formulas, and we've worked this out, but there's a table in the paper this week that readers can look at, and it says that the limits normally are 2,000 points on the merger side and 6,150 points on the movement of the merger. Okay. Excuse me. I don't think, like, where those numbers come from don't matter that much. Just the limits are 2,150. And yeah, this merger is, I think the numbers are over 3,500 and 600, I think. So it's way, way, way out of thing. We look at the market post this deal, there are only three companies in charge of more than 90% of the sheep kill in Ireland. And that's very bad for competition. And by the CCP's own measure stick, they can't let it go ahead under that rule. The decision might be different, but by the way they've done these deals before, And there have been lots of deals. So we have what they call a precedent there. If we look at ABP Slaney Meats, that deal was 2016. That went to the European Commission because there were so many countries involved. There was UK, France, and a Belgian element as well. So the CCPC didn't make the decision there. But all the decisions since then, like we saw the Dawn Dunbia decision, there was the one ABP, I think it was a small amateur down in Tipperary as well. Those decisions. If you look at what the CCP's decision, it was completely based on what the European Commission had said at the time. So we had this kind of situation where we know what the template they use for looking at these. We can back our own numbers because the Farmers Journal has really good data on who the market share, back our numbers into that, and we can say, okay, this is where this decision is going to be. It looks fairly simple, but it'll be a long, long process. And the thing is as well, like, we don't have official word this deal is even going ahead yet. Like, we presume it is, we don't have the official word. And then once they announce the deal, the firms have then submit to the CCPC that this is happening. The CCPC will do a phase one investigation. At that point, then all the organizations can put in, like the Irish Farm Association, ICMSA, whoever wants to put their spoke in, can make a submission in phase one. This one will almost definitely go to a phase two investigation. And from talking to the CCPC about phase two investigations, they are long because a lot of lawyers get involved. And you know as well as I do, when the lawyers get involved, these things can take a long time.
Okay, so we're looking at a long time period. We're looking at sheep being the issue rather than the cattle side of the business. I mean, is there something they could do, Lorcan, with that sheep element in terms of kind of a sub deal to the main deal? Is that a possibility?
Yeah, this is something that for Brian McEwen, CC, was very, very, he said it happens an awful lot, where if there's a problem bit of the deal, if there's like, if you can kind of carve out a bit of business, say, okay, we're going to take that bit of business and sell it to a third party. So they could say, like, Dawn Meats could be in and take over Kildare Chilean's beef business, take the sheep business and sell it to maybe one of the smaller producers that's already in the market, or set up a separate company that's separate to Dawn Meats and say, okay, that company is not to do us. We have a management buyout or something. There are ways around it. Like, but for the deal to go through this and for the sheep meat processing to come through, it doesn't look like it's going to fly.
Adam, we talked about this last week. Like, you know what I mean? Like, do you think that, you know, after hearing what Lorcan is saying, and obviously he's kind of coming down on the side of the CCPC saying that it doesn't look like it's going to fly if the deal is there at all, you know, I mean, positive or negative, do you feel for your guys on the cattle?
I suppose I'm getting mixed reaction, to be honest. Like, one of the reactions is, look, Dawn is going to have too much buying power as regards on the sheep, especially in the sheep end of the business. And the other side of the story is then, well, what would we do if Kildare Chilean just closed up the gate and nobody goes in there and uses that facility? You know, there's farmers in that region then, maybe, you know, not having a facility to kill animals. And, you know, Dawn, as we said last week, Dawn were ahead of Kildare Chilean on a lot of those, you know, factory league tables that were printed in the paper. I just want to ask Lorcan a quick one as regards, I suppose, somebody within the industry said to me during the week, and maybe this isn't a fair comment, but they said the CCPC is more concerned with retail competition rather than maybe, you know, as regards farmer competition from a factory point of view, that they're more to do with consumers and retail. And this could be actually good for consumers in terms of maybe lowering the price of beef long term. Or that is there merit in that argument, Lorcan, or is the CCPC across everything?
I think the CCB is very much across everything. I think, like, maybe just that the way people have seen the CCB, normal people interact with CCPC, is to hear ads on the radio, and those ads are very, very focused at consumer issues. So that's how people normally deal with it. The mergers and acquisitions part, they're kind of, they run the background. They have maybe 20 or 30 mergers a year they look at, and because it's a kind of very much a legal thing and nothing really consumer facing comes out of it, then it's not really, I suppose, people don't hear about it, but it's something very big part of what they do is mergers and acquisitions. I think on the competition side, from the first, I think the same problem exists whether you're selling into the meat processors or buying from them. If you have more choice of who you can buy from, then you have a better chance of getting a good price. Like, if I'm, say, Tesco or one of these companies, I go to, if I've got four producers I can buy from, I'm going to get a better price than if I have three producers. It's kind of simple as that.
Yeah.
Declan Marn, on the sheep side, like, I mean, you obviously have an interest on the sheep side, and a lot of sheep come from Donegal, Mayo, over to Kildare Chilling, like on the, you know, lambs, producer groups, etc., and that kind of thing. Would you see it, you know, if you were to put your eyes over it, like, would it be a negative for sheep producers if this deal went through?
Yeah, Jack, I would say there's a good bit of worry. As you said, a lot of producer groups sending a lot of lambs over to Kildare Chilling, all right. You know, it's an extra quote that you can get every week. If you're missing a quote, you know, it's less competition. So as a lamb producer, you would be a little bit worried about it. All right. Yeah.
Yeah, no, excellent. So, Larkin, a wrap on this. Like, I mean, effectively, it's going to take time, you feel. Like, even if, like, it's okay. First of all, is the deal on? Secondly, phase one. Thirdly, phase two. And that you could be into a year, maybe even longer, in terms of getting the decision on this.
Absolutely. I think that we are not going to see a quick resolution. Unless the deal, they, like, if like Dáil Méid and Kildare read what we see in the paper, and they know as well as we do what the rules are, and if they propose a deal that, say, Dáil Méid is going to take over Kildare Chilling's beef business. If that's the deal they put through, and like Kildare Chilling management will buy out the sheep business and run it as a separate entity, and if that's what's presented to the CCPC, then it could be quite a quick process. But I think if they try and push it through as it exists, it's going to be long.
Okay, and I suppose we have seen, as you say, even on the ag side, we've seen plenty of examples. I just think of Lakeland Dairies and Dale Farm in the north. Like, there's two purchasers of milk in the north of Ireland, really. Like, and they have 90% of the market. You know, the kind of way. So pieces can evolve kind of by doing little separate sub deals alongside the main deal, to kind of get the scale at the processing side as well, but maybe kind of keep some of the competition in. Larkin, thanks a million for your time on that this week. We'll have you back. Declan, talk to me on, we're getting a lot of queries, a lot of questions in on dairy beef, right? And trying to, I suppose, some farmers trying to get their head around where is calf price going to land this year? Obviously, it's only early February. So, like, it's a couple of weeks yet, Declan, before the bulk of dairy beef calves come on the market. Isn't that fair to say?
It is, Jack. Yeah, like, we had a report from Bandon last week, but, you know, those first early sales, you know, it's just... you have those customers for that real early calf. They want a decent calf going to grass in springtime, and they're willing to pay that bit more for those early calves. But like, we're not seeing, you know, many calves on the market just yet. You know, you're probably 2-3 weeks away from, you know, seeing real numbers build. So where that market settles into is yet to be seen. As we've spoken about, this great confidence in the beef market there at the moment. People say that are killing 24-month-old beef, dairy beef, currently are getting on really well. So look, they'll probably be going back and reinvesting again. But, you know, I would just have one note of caution is again, whatever you're buying this year is 24 months away from being killed. So what's the beef market going to look like in spring of 2025? You know, we wrote last week about the increased costs of calf rearing. Calf rearing costs up 44% on 2021 levels. So, you know, huge increase in milk replacer costs, in concentrate costs. So, you know, there's extra risk being taken on by the dairy beef farmer there. You're carrying it over, say, a 2-year period. And we just don't know, you know, hopefully beef markets will stay strong for the next number of years. But, you know, there is an extra risk there going into that system.
Yeah. And as you say, it's a bit early to call the price piece yet. And obviously the market decides, like, you know, but in terms of that Hereford calf, right, or that Hereford cross calf or that Angus cross calf would say it's coming out of the dairy cow. Like, I mean, where are the sums saying, you know, when we do our sums looking forward in terms of you have the rearing costs, you have the cost for the first summer, you have the cost for the second year, and then you're trying to get them away. Like that's the model you've been promoting over the last couple of years in terms of getting them away before that second winter. Like, I mean, where does the price, what does it to make a bit of a margin, like, you know, whatever it is, 100, 200, 300 euros a head. Like, I mean, what does the farmer need to be spending around the ring to kind of to make that happen?
Yeah, so I suppose looking at the Thrive demonstration farm, last year we had an average net margin of 210 euro per head. Those calves were probably purchased, you know, Angus heifers probably coming in 150, 160, Herefords maybe a 10 or more, and then bulls probably 10 to 20 on top of a heifer price. So that's where we were. That was at a beef price of, what did we average last year? 478 or 482, I think, was our average beef price paid there for last year. So, you know, that's where we're basing on that. Now, if you look at the increased calf rearing costs between, say, what was reared in 2021 versus this year, is an extra 50 euro going to come off that in terms of calf rearing costs. So that has to be taken into account. Fertilizer costs are obviously increased as well. But as well, you know, we're buying the top of the pops there, Jack, as well. We're buying the very best of calves, high dairy beef index, high beef sub-index calves, and that's the kind of margin we're coming out at doing it at a very high level. So I think we probably need to move away from saying an Angus calf is worth X and a Hereford is worth Y. we need to look at, you know, the commercial beef value, as we keep coming back to, we need to know that of each calf. I was at the Chagas Dairy Beef 500 conference last week, and Nicky Byrne showed, you know, the commercial beef value spread of Frisian calves and Angus calves. And look, there's a huge crossover there in the middle where your decent Frisian is sitting at the same level, if not above, say 20, 30, 40% of the Angus calves coming out. So that's where we're, you know, we're paying more for an Angus calf, thinking we have more beef potential in that animal. But in reality, you know, we're not maybe getting that with some animals due to the quality of the bull being used on the dairy herd. So, you know, a lot of the, say, looking at the Dairy Beef 500 program, a lot of them are working with Frisian bull calves. And the reason for that is they do exactly what they say on the tin, and they're inexpensive, and they're born earlier in the season. So they have three things going for them versus the beef calf, which is probably, at the moment, there's a little bit more risk because we don't know exactly what we're buying.
But yeah, and I hear you 100%. But I'm maybe looking a little bit further down the line, maybe than just the current season we're in. But I'm saying there's going to be less Frisian bull calves around the place, Declan. We've seen the capacity around sex semen increase. We've seen guys that don't want to kind of get these Frisian heifers anymore. They get a certain amount and they get them in the first 3 weeks, and they're switching then into beef very quickly. So I'm kind of just looking at this a little, and maybe in a little bit longer term, in terms of the more Angus and Hereford coming around the place, because there will be less Frisians. But you know, okay, leaving that aside, I mean, if I take your numbers and you're saying rearing costs have increased by, give or take, let's say 50 or 60 euros a head, like, I mean, effectively, if we take your numbers for last year, guys wouldn't want to be paying kind of much along 100 euros a lot for the calf, in the kind of way, for that kind of decent Hereford Angus calf. Like, is that a fair assumption to?
That's probably the reality of it, Jack, and it's difficult because there's a lot of dairy farmers, you know, improving the quality of that beef calf, putting more work into it, but the reality of it is they're probably not going to get paid any more for that calf, you know, when you see the economics of the whole system. But I think maybe more importantly for dairy farmers going forward is that you have a market for that calf. You know, they're going to put in 2-3 weeks of milk into that calf, so they need to cover their costs. And I think, you know, if it's a decent beef mare calf, farmers are going to be willing to pay that bit more. But, you know, that extra bit of work in terms of breeding probably isn't going to be reflected fully in the price of the calf going forward. I would say it's more secure in a market in the
I'll be back to you in just 1 minute, Declan. I'm just going to throw one question to Adam in terms of, I suppose, suckler farmers, Adam, and like over the last number of years, we've seen more and more of them rear these dairy beef calves. Do you see it continuing, even with the increased cost of rearing, even with the suckler cow herd getting that little bit smaller year on year, as we're talking about this 2-3% slide in suckler cow numbers? I mean, will they continue to backfill in with these dairy beef calves, do you reckon?
I think it's mixed, Jack, out there, and I'm not fudging the answer, but you've probably got two cohorts of farmers, right, to try this. You've got farmers that maybe it went down that road, didn't do a good job at it, maybe didn't get a lot of gain from grass, you know, went in with a lot of concentrates at the end and didn't get good carcass weights, and they're probably exiting again because they thought it was maybe a quick buck or it was a change, and sometimes a change will change everything, but actually that's not the case. And you've got other people who went down that road and they've done really well and they've hit their target weights and they see it working in along with a suckling system. You're talking to several farmers, even up this end of the country, maybe buying in 20 calves alongside 20 sucklers, and it's almost like the calves are running around as bonuses, you know, we'll say maybe before the cows on a rotation or whatever around fields, and that's worked out really well. So I'd say the people that are really honed in, you know, you have to be very good, you have to be a better farmer, I think, to do dairy beef than you'll get away with suckling farming. So I think some of those better people have definitely done well, and I think they'll go back again. But yeah, there is a bit of worry out there on calf rearing costs, you know, meal, calf milk replacer or stuff like that. And calf price at the moment, you couldn't make it work, I don't think, at the minute.
Yeah. Declan, I'll come back to you on feed price in a minute. But Lorcan, just in terms of, I suppose, energy costs and where they've gone, and I suppose the impact that that's having on fertilizer prices. Like, I mean, you've a kind of a couple of updates weekly in terms of this space. Like, I mean, energy costs, gas prices, they've come back a bit, but we haven't just yet seen, I suppose, the farm gate price of fertilizer come back yet. Just maybe give us a feel for kind of maybe where you see that happening, if it will happen.
Yeah, I think that the gas prices definitely dropped. And one thing we learned very quickly last year was that the price of gas and the price of fertilizer are fairly closely linked. But I think a lot of the fertilizer
plants are not really coming back online as quickly as we'd like. Some of the raw materials, like the potash and stuff, that generally comes from Belarus, so there's problems there as well. Like the jump in prices for fertilizer was mostly driven by gas, but not entirely driven by gas. Clearly, the fertilizer producers have all the problems that everyone else has at the moment, inflation in other areas. But we will see prices continue to come back. Like it'll be slow, but it'll be hopefully over the course of this year. We'll see prices return to probably, you know, 120% of where they were 3 years ago, and not the 300 or 400% we've seen in the last year. So it's got to get processed. It's just a matter of getting the supply on the ground and getting the processes working. But again, there are so many other things feeding into prices right now that we kind of, you're not going to see, you know, prices below €300 a ton of where we may have seen a couple of years ago.
Excellent. Thanks for that, Lorcan. Declan, feed price. You've done a kind of an update in terms of feed prices. Obviously, very high on the agenda for a lot of farmers at the moment that are filling feed bins, and it's a big money piece now. You know, I mean, before it was you could put a couple of ton in, and you might be spending 2,000. You're spending a lot more now on feed. Talk to me.
Yeah, Jack. So just as we entered into February, I sort of have a check up to see what's big companies are doing, and I suppose, you know, grain markets are suppressed maybe a small bit compared to how they were, say, in the middle of last year. But even I look back, say, from early December to currently, you know, native barley prices are back probably €20 a ton to around 280, and then you're seeing, say, imports maybe are €5 a ton over that. Maize is kind of holding up; it's €315 a ton. And then the big one is soya, which is 615, 620 collected from the port. Like that's, you know, it's staying really high price. So while the other grains are coming down, maybe soya is still staying very high. And look, it's only making up 8 to 10% of our rations, but, you know, it's probably making up 12, 15% of the cost of the ration due to the high price. So you have two cohorts. Like basically, there's very little change in the price of ration coming into February. You have two cohorts. You have one lot of feed companies who kind of forward bought probably right through until the end of April. And therefore they have, you know, barley going in and maize going into that ration at higher prices than currently. So they're not going to change. And then you have those that are maybe more hand to mouth, but the price of soya is probably stopping them from pulling back prices any significant level. So I would say it's going to be into the end of April or early May before you're seeing any reduction in ration prices. What it means on the ground is it leaves a finishing ration, you know, 12% finishing ration at around between 415, 420, 425. A 16% general purpose ration is coming in 440 to 460. And then I suppose at the moment, ewe and lamb would be one that's been bought a lot there at the moment. 19% is coming in around your 445, 450. And if you're going for a 20%, you could be paying 455, 465, kind of that region. And then if you look at the calf starter ration, you're looking at 520, 540 euro a ton when it's put in the small bags, which most lads will be operating with. That's 13 euro, 13.50 a bag. Jack, you know, a couple of years ago, we were 850, 870 a bag, you know, so it's a huge jump in a short period of time.
Super, excellent, Declan. So that's why the cost piece is such an issue for sheep farmers, as you say. Even though lamb prices is upwards of 670 a kilo, and beef price well up there, as Adam said, it's over €6 a kilo. But the feed price is definitely soaking up a lot of that increase on both those sectors. 100%, folks. Thanks for that this week. Chat to you next week. Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks for watching and thanks for listening. Thanks to all our own specialists, Adam, Lorcan and Declan. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. Thanks to Grassland Agro once again for helping us to make this show happen. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.